It's always a pleasure when we get to welcome to the program Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center. Shop local. Shop at New Balance Knoxville. Doc, there's no reason to even bother with the website when you can get the incredible treatment the moment you walk through the door. They also offer curbside pickup and delivery, and they will take care of you literally from head to toe 24/7.
Yeah, absolutely. Sharon and David and all the great folks at New Balance at Knoxville, they're in the Suburban Shopping Center. You go by there. Here again, you call them and tell them that once they get your sizes, you can do, they can curbside pickup, they can delivery. So many varieties. If you go around town, a lot of places are having trouble getting inventory. You go to department stores. And I heard someone say, hey, I went to look at so-and-so for inventory. I said, why are you looking there? And they said, well, with the New Balance in Knoxville, we should have gone there first time because they had everything we were looking for. They've got a tremendous variety. They will perfectly fit you, and they will take care of you from that day forward. So, absolutely, they are the fit specialist, New Balance of Knoxville, there in the Suburban Shopping Center.
If you have a question or comment for Doc, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Doc, what was it like to see Josh Heupel and his staff put their team through the paces and welcome the public? Thankfully, the weather cooperated so that a few thousand could get a peek at the orange and white for the first time under their new staff.
Well, I think it was great. I think it was wonderful for, first of all, you know, I love what Josh Heupel has done, opening up the team as much as he can, you know, safely to the media and to the fans, embracing the players he's got there, opening up this. I think this offense is going to be fun to watch. And I realize that they've got some challenges, some talent positions they got to fill, but some hope. They're going to be fun to watch. They're going to be a fun team to go see with the 8 home games this year. And I really like it. You know, Josh Heupel, you know, didn't get to where he is, you know, so quickly without being a really good offensive coach, much less a head coach now. So, you know, and I think they're going to really surprise some people. You know, and here again, down on numbers, down on maybe talent right now, but I still think they're going to put on a heck of a program, a heck of a show. And this Saturday may have been the first glimpse of the fact that I think people are really going to enjoy that offense. Every time I talk to one of my colleagues at ESPN that would go physically and do a Central Florida game, they would come out of there and say, well, this is so much fun to watch. That you better not take a drink of water between plays because you may miss a play or two, but they're going to snap it pretty quickly. But anyway, I think it's an omen for good things to come for Tennessee, and it's about time.
Doc, one thing that I got a kick out of was when Tennessee, they started on like the opponent's 17, so they only had 17 yards to go. But there was a tackle that was made, and offensive lineman Kyron Calbert objected to the way the defender threw the running back down. So Calbert goes over and starts jawing with the defensive player. Meanwhile, they're getting lined up at the line of scrimmage. He runs over, doesn't get set, flag, 5-yard penalty, illegal procedure, and the coaching staff jumped all over him. Look, we understand that you didn't like the tackle, but you got to get lined up because we're running another play. This offense is really going to go fast, and, Doc, I think fans are going to enjoy this pace.
You know, Jimmy, and that's a prime example. That's one subtle way to teach discipline. You just cost your team 5 yards and because you couldn't maintain your discipline. It's okay to be angry. But take it out on your next block. Back to the line of scrimmage, get lined up, and take it out. Be physical with the guy you're going to block or the linebacker you're supposed to reach on the next play. You know, I tell people that this tempo is going to be – it's going to take some getting used to. I mean, Wake Forest University snapped the football faster than anybody in NCAA football in Division I like two of the last 3 years. And they were snapping at an average of every, I think it was 19.1 seconds. When I did a Wake game there last year against Virginia, you literally could not take a breath. The receivers would go down the field and turn around if the ball, when the ball was over, before the ball even hits the ground, if it's not being thrown again, they're turning around and running back to the line of scrimmage to get lined up. That's how fast the tempo is. And, I mean, teams that they should have had trouble beating, they just wore out their defenses, you know, in part of the half because they couldn't get lined up. So I think this is going to be fun for Tennessee fans to see.
And one drill that they did, Doc, I mentioned earlier, but they had the quarterbacks taking a snap in the shotgun and then firing it immediately to the left. They didn't take a step. They didn't even have a chance to grab the laces on the football. Catch and fire. and to a receiver. That's probably going to be a running back in the flats over there that they're throwing to. But they were working on that drill, and I thought that's an indication of what they're going to try to do. They're going to try to spread the field. They're going to throw short passes. They're going to throw quick passes. They're going to go vertical at times. But I think that's just a part of the arsenal that they're going to throw out there, of those quick passes that they held those quarterbacks working on, which didn't always work for Tennessee last year.
Well, Jimmy, I think, you know, we talked about it last year. With that stable of running backs they had last year, you know, why not get the ball in their hands in open field? Why not get them in space? And, you know, Jim, all these guys that call, the wonderful callers we get on Mondays, that's what I remember Jim specifically saying. He asked me, say, Doc, why don't they throw the football quickly to our running backs in space? And I said, Jim, I can't answer the question either. And that's the same question that people doing the football games are asking. You got those guys that can make people two and three miss at a time. Get them the football quickly, as opposed to waiting till a safety or a linebacker can bracket them, you know, outside of where even if they catch it, they can get 3 or 4 yards. You know, get them the football. And that's what Lincoln Riley does such a nice job at Oklahoma, and that's what Wake Forest did such a nice job. That's why I think they played. That's why they were able to stay with Clemson for a while, even though they were completely outmanned. I think that's going to give that kind of creativity, I think, is very refreshing. I think Tennessee fans are going to like it.
Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch. If you have a question or comment for Doc, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free. For AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers, the toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall. Let's check in with Jim. You're on Sports Talk. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hello.
Hey, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Jim.
Good afternoon, Dr. Punch. You know, one of the interesting things about sports is the way different sports evolve. They change over a period of time. I think college football is a really good example of where that sport is now in terms of it's a game where offense is really emphasized, and it's hard to play that defensive game anymore. And of course Nick Saban changed into that, and so that sport has changed. I'm curious about college basketball. We just ended the season last Monday. When you look at the top teams now, or even not necessarily the top teams, but just teams in general, where do you see the game right now trending? Because you've got coaches that are very comfortable with basically using the three-point shot as their offense. You've got coaches that still want to have three-point shooting, get a lot of points from beyond the arc, but they don't want to give up points in the paint either. They want to have some semblance of balance. And obviously one of the things that dictates what a coach is going to do is, you know, what his players are going to do in terms of their skill level. If you've got guys who can't shoot three-pointers, quit jacking them up. Where do you see right now the game of college basketball in terms of how it's played, and where do you see it going over the next, you know, 5 years, say?
What do you think, Doc?
Well, I think that's a great question, Jim. And I think what we saw, I mean, this year, well, to take Tennessee, for example, I mean, Rick Barnes' defense, I mean, they play a smothering defense, and they're active and they're aggressive. But a lot of teams in the SEC figured out that if they can reverse the basketball quick enough against Tennessee's defense, as good as Tennessee was, as athletic as Tennessee was, and if you can shoot that three-point shot, you can score pretty openly against Tennessee. You don't have to penetrate as much, and so many of these teams were able to. Arkansas, for example, Alabama, for example, that outside shooting. Auburn, for example, you know, they just were able to get those shots up. Not that they weren't contested, but they were not completely contested because of their ability to reverse the basketball. And then look at the teams like Gonzaga and Baylor. I mean for much of the year, I'm not sure for the entire year, but for much of the year, Gonzaga had all five starters averaging in double figures, and then Baylor And they're like, they reminded me of UNLV, the run and shoot. They just fly up and down the floor, and it was all about offense, you know, penetrate. Rather than taking a five-foot jumper or lay-in or floater, they would penetrate to within 6 feet of the basket, dish it out to the side for a three-point shot. That's what and Gonzaga and Baylor did the same thing. So I think you're right. I think my opinion is that you've got to be able to score now. And even though defense is great, so many teams today, you know, they keep reversing that basketball on you quickly enough, and they can jack it up from outside. You won't have any way to stop it unless they miss.
Jimmy?
I kind of echo what Doc said. And I do think it's an interesting change. I still think a good mid-range game can do wonders. I thought that Gonzaga had that. I thought Gonzaga scored at all levels, around the basket, mid-range, three-pointers. So I think that's the most effective. But sometimes it's hard to find enough talent to be able to do that. But I think it kind of evolved a little bit toward the NBA game, which, Jim, I think you were suggesting.
Yeah.
Shoot a layup or a dunk, or you shoot a three.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in watching the games in the tournament, I was just amazed that some of the games, the shooting was just absolutely incredible in terms of the three-point shot. I like to see a little more balance, not just strictly or so much stuff on the perimeter beyond the arc. I do like to see stuff under the basket as well. But I was just curious where you think this may be going. Well, guys, I appreciate your thoughts. Have a good afternoon.
You too, Jim. Thank you very much. And I think it comes down to Jim referenced it in his comments that you've got to have the personnel because, Jimmy, anybody can throw up a three. It's just you have to hit some. And not everybody has the personnel to where they can make that the staple of their offense. You look at a team like Alabama, that was a squad that if it had a cold first half, you could perhaps count on it heating up in the second half. It would be a team whose defense would create more opportunities on offense. And that's something that we heard at Tennessee when Bruce Pearl was in place, that he wasn't necessarily worried about missed open shots. And Rick Barnes has said the same thing. He doesn't mind anybody missing a shot if it's a good shot. Right. But the defense is going to give you the opportunity to get those points back if indeed you have the open three and you take the open three.
A quick note of interest, while there was a lot of great shooting going on in the tournament, there was a Saturday, I think, of the second round. I watched eight. There were eight games that day. Seven of the teams shot 27% or worse from three-point range.
Yeah, there was also some horrid shooting going on.
Yeah, so yeah, you had a mixture of it. So you had some outstanding shooting and then some bricks.
Yes.
So Butch Jones would have appreciated it.
That they would have, and they've added to the skyline in Indianapolis. Yeah. We'll get a break. We've got more with Doc Punch coming up, another half hour with Doc. If you have a question or comment for him, 656-9900, 656-9900. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall. We have another half hour with Dr. Jerry Punch as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And Doc's appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local, shop New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall. 656-9900, 656-9900. Let's check in with Sam. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Sam.
Well, hello, guys. I had a couple of questions unrelated, one about the Masters and then the other one about Coach Vitello. But, Dr. Punch, maybe I could direct this one to you on the Masters. There was I only got to watch parts of a couple of days, and I didn't get to watch the finish. Of course, I know how it finished, but there was a guy on there, a young kid. Last name started with a Z. I think it was his first major appearance. I'm not sure about that, but he was among the top leaders in the early going, and I don't know how he finished. But there was two things that I was curious about. One. Just kind of what is his story? I'd never heard of him, and he was impressive in the times that I saw him. And the other question related to that is there was some connection with him and Tony Romo that I thought was real compelling, but I can't remember exactly what it was.
So the guy's name is Will.
That was
Zalatoris. You want to take it, Doc? Are you familiar with it?
Oh, that's fine. Either way, yeah, Jimmy, Will Zalatoris, who played at Wake Forest, and he finished at 9 under. And Matsuyama finished at 10 under, obviously just missed a putt on the 18, but he easily had the win. I mean, impressive. I mean, Jimmy, that young man, we're going to hear a lot from him, but so impressive. His ball striking ability, his accuracy, his poise. That was only his third, I think, major and sixth tournament and first time ever at Augusta. But, Jimmy, I was so impressed.
I was too. You're exactly right. His third major, he finished sixth in the U.S. Open. I noticed him for the first time when I was following all these Korn Ferry Tour events last year. And one reason I was following real closely is because Holston Hills was going to host the Korn Ferry before they ended up calling it off. But the events that they had, he would win third, fifth, second, win. And he kept showing up. I'm like, my goodness, this guy is consistently good. I didn't know he was 6'4 and weighed 120 pounds and had a 28-inch waist. My goodness. But he hits it a ton. And he's from Dallas. And when he was 9 years old, he played with Justin Spieth and he played with Scottie Scheffler. But being from Dallas, he developed a relationship with Tony Romo, who's an outstanding golfer in his own right. And so Romo gave him some advice about how to try to relax and deal with playing in the Masters. But I was real impressed with this guy. Going into the final round, I was texting back and forth with my brother, and I said, this guy's going to finish in the top five. The nerves are not going to get him. And he's got a lot of game. He's really good. And I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about him on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I really liked the way he presented personally as well as how he hit the golf ball. It was just pretty phenomenal. He was a new guy to me, and I'm a Cowboys fan, so I was interested in the Romo connection. The other question I had, I know you're going to have Coach Otello on a little later. I'm very, very interested in that. And also, as everyone is, just terribly impressed with what he's done since he's been here. My question is related to his contract. How long is he under contract for as we speak? And do we need to start looking at getting renegotiating his contract pretty quick and tying him down if at all possible?
Well, there was an extension that was put together 2 years ago. I'm not exactly sure how long that was for, Jimmy. I'm trying to think. It was really, I thought, interesting how it was handled, because they – open the conversation right about the time that Tennessee was making its way to the NCAA tournament, their first tournament since 2005. And it was just, I was really impressed with how both parties had respect for the other. And it's like, why don't we, appreciate your interest, and why don't we just go ahead and talk about this when everything's done, rather than trying to have, one foot on each side of the fence. So I just... I believe there was an agreement. I for the life of me, can't remember if it was a couple of years or what.
I've got it. In June 19 of 2019, they gave him an extension through June of 2024. And the extension includes increases where he would earn $580,000, meaning next season, back, so 2020, and then it rises to $650,000 by the end of the agreement.
Let me stack him up with.
Yeah, my answer to how long is he under contract, my answer would be not long enough.
Not long enough, you bet. Yeah. Well, where does that rank him, Jimmy, among the other SEC coaches, with that $680,000 salary? I know that's further out, but.
Well, it's 580 that goes to 650. John, you would have a better idea than I would.
Yeah, well, you just take a look at how long the tenures have been and the accomplishments for a number of other SEC coaches, and I'd be surprised if he were top half, because you've got Tim Corbin in Nashville. You look at those that have just won national championships, Paul Mainieri at LSU, Dave Van Horn, even though he hadn't won the title, has taken his team to the College World Series at Arkansas. I just think that it would be – and Mike Bianco, as long as he's been at Ole Miss. So I would be surprised if he were top half. But I do think that Tennessee would be very wise to approach such a conversation.
Yeah, I'll leave you with this comment. Van Horn's got 19 seasons under his belt at Arkansas, and I think those folks down there are expecting perhaps a retirement in the next year or two or three years, and I know they're looking at Vitello as the number one guy. Hopefully they can get him locked down before that ever becomes an option for him.
That would be nice, because I do believe that everyone in the program has earned that.
Everyone is, yeah. Hey, thanks so much, guys. Enjoy your show.
Sure do appreciate it. Thank you. 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. And, Doc, I know that, as you just shared with Sam, very impressed with the job that Tony Vitello has done and that he and his staff continue to do.
You know, from the day he got here, John, I was just thinking about that. The day after he was hired, I was with Bob Kessling down at UT on campus doing something with Bob, and he was supposed to do something. They were going to do something about the Vitello announcement or whatever. And correct me if I'm wrong, John. You would know better, a lot better than I would. But didn't Tony get in his car the day he was hired and drive to like Missouri or somewhere and meet a busload of Tennessee high school all stars? He wanted to be there when those kids got off the bus as the new head coach at Tennessee. Didn't he do that on his own? I love the fact that this guy is nothing but he's the Energizer Bunny, and the energy is infectious. It's infectious for the team, the players, the fans. You know what he's done. I realize a lot of it's talent, but what he's done with the pitching staff, with the offense, the way they play ball, I just love everything about, you know. And I have not been able to see him play. I've seen him play on television, and I was traveling this weekend. I was in Nashville. We'll talk about that in a minute. About what happened to Vanderbilt, but I just think he is such a breath of fresh air. I love what he's done with the program, and I feel like with Danny White here, given his history, I can't imagine Danny White letting Tony Vitello even think about going anywhere. First of all, he had to hide his car keys, number one. But secondly, I think the only time Tony Vitello is going west, maybe to Omaha. And I'm hoping we get to go watch him.
Well, it's really something to hear, Jimmy, that so many of the players that we get the chance to hear from, whether it be in post-game situations or whatever, will say that they feel that the squad reflects the attitude and the approach of their head coach. And as you've talked about and remarked, you can just see all the work that's gone into establishing a culture and raising the expectations and the beliefs of the guys that are currently wearing the orange and white. It really has been something to see that you go from hoping or looking at the other side and going, wow, that's fill in the blank school from the SEC, and it's like, hey, let's go.
John, you're closer to it than I am, but when I watch him play, and I've seen him on TV a number of times, they just have this air about them that they're confident. They don't feel like they don't belong. They don't feel like if it's a game that's really close that they can't find a way to pull it out. I mean, one of the games they won over the weekend, they scored in one inning. One.
Yep.
But they got a five spot on the board, and it held up. So I just like the grit about this team. The way they fight, the belief that they have, the belief that's been installed by Tony Vitello, in my opinion.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of West Town Mall. 656-9900 if you want to get a question or comment in under the wire. 656-9900. Doc, I know that you love living in Knoxville and East Tennessee, as you have for quite some time now, and you also love it when people get recognized for their service to the community as well as lending a helping hand in so many different ways. So I know you're awfully excited about someone that you are going to be part of honoring this week.
Yeah, absolutely, John. And on Friday night at Holland Field Blaine Stadium there at Knoxville Catholic High School, they're honoring Tim Irwin, Knoxville former high school greats, and of course Tennessee legend and Minnesota Vikings legend, now Judge Tim Irwin. You could not put into words, you couldn't put a value on what he has meant, not on the field for many years and the great memories and what he's been a part of the Tennessee history in terms of a football player, but what he's done off as a judge and what he's done with young people in the juvenile court process and all the lives he's changed and turned around. So it is incredibly honorable. I mean, I'm so thrilled that he gets to be honored at the Green and Gold Gala on Friday night. It's going to be outdoors at the football field. And how appropriate that you get to honor big judge Tim Irwin, you know, outdoors on a football field with music and lights and highlights and lots of his friends showing up to attend. I think there are still tickets if people want to go to the Knoxville Catholic website. But it's just great that when you can do something like that in the community and give back to people, not just for what they did as a player, but what they've done off the field and the difference they've made, and certainly Judge Irwin is well-deserving.
Yeah, Jimmy, you take a look at what he's done. He's certainly kept us entertained for years and years and years. Does a great job with you when it comes to recapping Tennessee football on Sunday mornings. And you look at what he's meant with his fishing tournament, all that he's done for the Boys and Girls Club.
Yep.
Just it's really impressive how much he has invested himself with his time, efforts, and energy in his hometown.
There are not a lot of people I'd get up for at 6:15 on a Sunday morning after a football game to do a show with than Tim Irwin. So that's how much
well
I like
said.
Him. But he does a great job. He's very descriptive of it. I love having him. He knows football. And he, you know, he'll tell it like it is. He doesn't sugarcoat it. Obviously a Tennessee fan, but his analysis is spot on. And, you know, you guys are right. He does so much for this community. And I think this community is blessed to have somebody like Tim Irwin living in it.
I agree as well.
Doc, I wanted to ask you about Martin Truax. He gets the win at Martinsville. It was delayed by a day. Had a pretty much a goal with his teammate Denny Hamlin. And then Chase Elliott ended up finishing second. William Byron was fourth. Kyle Larson fifth. Your thoughts on Truax being a repeat winner on the Cup Series?
Yeah, won three of the last four at Martinsville, Virginia, the paperclip NASCAR shortest oval. As you mentioned, Jimmy, he had a battle with his teammate, Denny Hamlin. Hamlin had the fastest car in short runs. And of course, Ryan Blaney actually had led quite a bit too. But Hamlin and Blaney were the two cars that dominated. Of course, Truex, in typical veteran fashion, waited around at the end of the race. He actually ran Hamlin down, waited until Hamlin's car had some handling issues. It got tight late. And with 15 laps to go, Martin Truex Jr. was able to get by his teammate and get the victory. So, Truex, one of the more, you know, just incredible, you know, in terms of character individuals, you know, integrity, character. I don't know what else you could use to describe Martin Truex Jr., but just a good, good person, so respected. Probably he's taken over for Jimmy Johnson, who's now left NASCAR, as the most respected driver in the garage area overall. But he gets the victory. It's a 1-2 for Joe Gibbs Racing at Martinsville. And oh, by the way, you're right, that race was supposed to run Saturday night under the lights at Martinsville, and then it was delayed because of weather to Sunday early afternoon, and then because of weather again, it was delayed until Sunday night. So it was night today tonight. And also the Xfinity race was rain delayed, and they ran it on Sunday. And a young man from Hendersonville, Tennessee, Josh Berry, driving for Dale Earnhardt Jr., gets his first ever Xfinity win. So Josh Berry, talk about a young man that was just ecstatic. He drove his behind off and beat his teammate from Junior Motorsports, and Noah Gregson and a few others, but he got the win. So, you know, pretty good weekend for that young man from Hendersonville, Tennessee, getting the victory lane at Martinsville, getting that historic grandfather clock that they give all the winners there, and, of course, Martin Truex gets the win on Sunday in the Cup car.
Ryan Blaney at Martinsville, he dragged his air gun out of the pit. He had to be sent back to 19th place. How does that happen, Doc?
Well, I mean, every millisecond, every tenth of a second is crucial. On that final pit stop, he comes in. The crew comes over the wall. They can come over the wall when you're one box away. They come over the wall. The pit boxes are really tight, and they're congested on Martinsville on pit roads. It's a curved pit road down toward turn one and two. So he pulls in. The right front tire changer, outside front tire changer, runs across the wall with the air hose. And when Blaney stopped the car, I watched the replay twice last night, the left front tire was on the air hose. So when the guy changes the right side tire, comes around on the left side and changes the left side tire and takes off, there's no way that that the crew member can get the hose out from under the tire. You know, it was hard to get it with Matt because it was already under the tire. He pulls the tire off, they put the tire back on, and the hose is still caught there, and then he rolls forward. And there might have been a millisecond or two where the tire carrier could have jerked the hose out. In any event, he takes off. It pulls the hose out of the crew member's hands. The air gun goes down pit road. That's a no-no. You get a penalty. He goes back to the last car on the lead lap. He drove his way. He probably had, if not the best, second best car on the, you know, at the track all day. But it is what it is. You make those mistakes on pit road, and he was able to gain, you know, half a Sponto in the final laps in that final run. But Martinsville was so tight and congested, he was not going to be a contender to victory. His victory went away because of that incident on pit road.
Doc, you mentioned you were in Nashville, and Georgia did something that stunned top-ranked Vanderbilt as they won 14-2 and then got the finale after dropping the second game 9-1. They beat Kumar Rocker. They no decisioned, Jack Leiter. And so it's the biggest it's the first time Georgia's beaten the number one team in a series since at home against Mississippi State back in 1993.
John, I was at the hotel right beside the stadium there in Vanderbilt in the weekend for an event. I wanted to go to the baseball game so badly, but there were a lot of people staying there that are Vandy fans, and they were coming back in. And I was eager because I couldn't keep up with scores, and it would have been rude to, you know, to have my phone out. But I wanted to know, and as soon as I got out of the car back at the hotel, I could see from their faces that things weren't going well. And when I heard the scores, I couldn't believe it. And I looked at 25 runs. Vanderbilt, with that pitching staff, gave up 25 runs to Georgia in three games. I mean, that's just – I mean, how does that happen? How does the staff – and here's the other thing is that you know how good Vanderbilt is in the field defensively. They had four errors in the field in one ball game. They just couldn't – they were, you know, fielding errors and throwing errors. I just can't imagine how a team – and the Vanderbilt coach, John, you know, he said it started earlier in the week. I think they played Middle Tennessee State on Tuesday night. And he said, we were not sharp then. We looked like we were asleep in that ball game, and we won like 5-4, I think, over Middle Tennessee State. And then Georgia comes to town, and suddenly Georgia just, you know, just, it wins 2 out of 3, but, you know, is dominant with the bat. So, you know, I couldn't believe that a team like Vanderbilt could have two games, much less 2.5 games where they played that poorly.
It'll be something to see, as it will be a fantastic matchup when Tennessee and Vanderbilt square off this weekend. I know you'll be excited to see how it plays out. It'll be 7 o'clock on Friday, 4 o'clock on Saturday, and then 1 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be – I mean, how about that? Number one and number three or whatever in the nation in baseball, gosh, it just doesn't get much better. And although I have not been able to go to a Tennessee baseball game, and I listen to you guys call, and you can hear, I don't know if you can feel it as much there, but you can certainly hear the energy of the fans through the radio. So I don't know who the engineer is putting microphones out or it's just coming through the booth mic, but you can hear that the fact that the Tennessee fans are into it, and they need to be into it this weekend when top-ranked Vanderbilt comes in. I mean, they're going to want to rebound and show that they're a really good baseball team, and hopefully Tony Vitello's guys can continue with that confidence and go to the plate with those sticks and bring it off the mound and continue what they have started this year in the SEC.
Doc, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
We'll talk to you next Monday, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Doc.
Thank you. That's Dr. Jerry Punch joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall.